after I had exited the business, and I ran through the numbers of what I had made owning that business through cash distributions, which is typically what an entrepreneur is optimizing for, is what can I distribute to myself. When I looked at what I made from cash distributions of that business to what I had made in the exit of the business, the final liquidity event of the business, it broke down to like within a percentage point of the 80-20 rule, where like 80% of the outcome is driven by 20% of the effort. And so 20% of what I had made in that business the entire time running it for 7 years was in the cash flow. And then 80% of the economics that accrued to me as the owner were in the exit.
Finally, after 5 years of product failures, my 35th offer actually worked. And my next 55 products generated over $11 million in sales in just 4 years. But after seeing the flaws in my business, I decided to shut it all down and restart from scratch, as us entrepreneurs do. Follow me and the other capless pig-loving entrepreneurs as I continue my journey towards $100 million in sales. I'm your host, Steve J. Larson, and welcome to Season 2 of Sales Funnel Radio.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? It is Steve Larson. Welcome back to Sales Funnel Radio. Excited to be here. Got a special guest and personal friend on. Really stoked for today's interview and for what we are going to talk about. And before we jump into it, though, he is one of the guest and featured speakers of the Offer Launch event happening October 26th through the 28th. Go to offerlaunch.com and get your ticket. One of the smartest people I've ever met in a skill set that we all know about is funnel people, but I don't know that we know anything about. And so we know it's there, but none of us know actually how to do it stereotypically. So I'm really psyched to have his expertise here at Offer Launch. And with that, welcome to the show. How you doing?
What's up, bro? Happy to be here.
Mr. Raleigh Williams, you are an absolute animal, an M&A stud. And I'm like super psyched to have you, honestly, at the event. It's going to be awesome.
I know. I'm stoked to be there. That'll be awesome. I'm stoked for it.
A lot of people in my Sales Funnel Radio and in my following, and you know, those who call themselves capitalist pigs, we all know that mergers and acquisitions is like the place to end up or how to get there, you know. But and even until you and I started talking like a year and a half ago, something like that, started becoming friends, maybe about a year and a half ago, became friends and start, you know, keep talking and brain dumping. And I would say that even at that time, I always kind of looked at M&A and any kind of acquiring of any portion of a business, part or whole, as this thing that sits way out in the ether. And then you said, when we were at a mastermind, and you said something, I think it was something a professor told you, that your focus should be on having as many, like, is it exits or cash flow?
Liquidity events.
That was it right there. Yeah. The liquidity events as possible, and started making me rethink how I approach funnel space. And so I'm super psyched to have you as a speaker. And a lot of people know who you are. A lot of people may not as well. So do you mind just kind of giving us a background on what you do and kind of how it's evolved over time? Because I think most with your skill set don't come over here to our space. And you're like bridging a cool gap that's pretty unique, you know?
Yeah, totally. So I started as a mergers and acquisitions lawyer. M&A is basically the process of buying or selling companies or combining them in some way. And so I was working at a big law firm in New York and then later Texas, working for big private equity funds and large public companies that go about acquiring businesses or selling divisions of businesses that they have. And so that's kind of where I started. I did that for about a year. And then I decided, after seeing all of these people that were getting rich on these transactions, that I should do it myself. And so I ended up starting an escape room business that then turned into a family entertainment business that I ran with my brother. We owned escape rooms, trampoline parks, axe throwing businesses. And at some point within running that, about 4 or 5 years in, we kind of decided that we were tired and we didn't want to. We kind of got to this point where we just knew that we didn't want to grow the business like we had done up to that point. That like the just continuing to bleed and sweat for the business wasn't sustainable over the long term. And so we started trying to think of ways that we could get out. And then I remembered that I had done something like that in the past. And so I started talking to potential acquirers about what they would buy the business for. And they said at that time that the business was worth $0. Even though we were making like $2 million a year in profit, we just hadn't built it in a way that it was, you know, purchasable by anybody. And so then it took another 3 years in order for us to clean the business up and kind of make it exitable, make it sellable. And then after that was done, we ended up selling the entire business for $26 million over a course of a couple of transactions to a couple of different buyers. And that was in at the end of 2022. And then at that point, after I sold, I said, I'm never starting anything ever again. So then I started to look at coaching businesses and those type of businesses to potentially acquire. And obviously we've done one together. So that's kind of the rough and dirty on what got me here today.
Oh, very cool. Well, and like, I think what's powerful is, it's so funny, man. When we started going through to grab that business back in December, which I can't believe it's September now. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Watching you go through this total zone of genius. It was like watching Tony Stark and like everything blacks out and you're just like pressing buttons in the ether and watching you put the deal structure together outside of the revenue model, which is what a lot of the people, you know, who listen to Sales Funnel Radio and the funnel world, like we're all internet marketers. We're great at creating brand new customers, you know, at break even or better at speed. Yeah. And like, how cool is that? But you know, we'll create the offer. You're treating the entire business like the offer and structuring that deal. I've never seen anything like that. It was such an epic education. It was so cool.
It's like when I watch you do marketing, you know, to everything looks amazing. I'm like, how did you do that? It's when I've been doing it for a while. And so it's less sexy. It's less complicated than you're making it sound, but I appreciate it.
Vice versa. And totally same. Just like total zone of genius. I remember reaching out to a buddy once and I was like, oh my gosh, it's like the Beautiful Mind guy. And I can't tell if what you're doing is real. Yeah, I'm just like, holy crap, really? That's how this works? And I mean, I like reading contracts because I'm weird, but like, dude, reading that contract you wrote was like, it was Disneyland. I mean, I had so much fun with that thing. Anyway, I was super psyched to have you, man, at the event. And I really want everyone who's like watching, listening now to recognize where our road will probably lead you at some point, which is going to be in, I mean, I made 55 products in 3 years, dude. Like, and a lot of them just I killed. And not recognizing the inherent value and just understanding a little bit of like the type of value that your skill set brings to the table when it's like, do I really have to murder everything or can I just, I mean, package it up, spin it off, sell it out? Like, it's going to be really cool to have you talk about that stuff.
When I ran through after I had exited the business and I ran through the numbers of what I had made owning that business through cash distributions, which is typically what an entrepreneur is optimizing for, is what can I distribute to myself on a monthly or, you know, whatever quarterly basis. When I looked at what I made from cash distributions of that business to what I had made in the exit of the business, the final liquidity event of the business, it broke down to like within a percentage point of the 80-20 rule where like 80% of the outcome is driven by 20% of the effort. And so 20% of what I had made in that business the entire time running it for 7 years was in the cash flow. And then 80% of the economics that accrued to me as the owner were in the exit and were in the liquidity event. And so as an entrepreneur, if you are pursuing entrepreneurship and you're learning from Steve and you're learning all of these tactics, they're such powerful tools that can be used. If you don't run them through to the end of the game, and you can make so much more money. You've already done, that's the interesting thing is like entrepreneurs tend to do all of the hard stuff. And then once it doesn't get hard anymore, they're like, I'm bored. Like I want to go.
That's exactly what happens. It's a glutton for punishment kind of mentality. I don't know. Yeah. I felt weird the first time we took a distribution and the thing that we bought. Cause I was like, it wasn't challenging though. I wasn't up till 4 a.m. What?
Yeah. So like, if you can use those tools and it's just like a slight tweak and you change it 1% to like run it through to the end of the play, your economic outcome can be vastly different. And obviously like just running it to be profitable is great, but if you can take that profitability and then build something that somebody else wants to buy, figure out how to turn it into an asset that's sellable, you can make a lot of money for very, very minimal additional work involved in it.
That's huge. That's so powerful, man. And I recognize also that anyone coming from the funnel internet marketing space, that I'm speaking in huge blanket statements, you know, and some of this might apply to you and some might not and such. But when you look at, I mean, I feel like every time you and I would see each other in passing, it was always like a 1 or 2 hour just vomit on each other, just swapping back and forth, you know, just like just tons of which I thought was so fun. But when you look at like the funnel space and internet marketing space and think about the goal of having as many liquidity events as possible. I mean, I remember that there was a few times where I'd be like, well, you know, hey, typically like I would go launch the product like this, or I would do this. And lovingly, you'd slap my wrist a little bit with the reminder that if a large liquidity event is the goal, that actually would probably hurt the business, you know? And there was several different situations where that kind of popped up. What kind of comes to mind when you think of like the top things that our space is kind of doing that we think is cool, but actually kind of jacks us up?
I'm trying to think of just the things of in the business that we own together and how we've run that business together. And obviously,
hey, I hope you're enjoying the episode. Let me interrupt for just 1 minute here. One time I was speaking on the stage at this event, this guy picked up a microphone and he said, "Steve, when do Facebook ads begin paying off?" And I remember looking confused and just asking back, like, "What do you mean?" He repeated the question and said, "Well, we've been spending a lot of money on Facebook ads for a long time now, and we're just wondering when this begins to all pay off, when we actually start making money from the ad." I said, "Wait, Facebook ads are not an investment. They don't pay off someday. This is direct response marketing. So if we don't get a payoff within the first few days, we turn off the ads. How much money have you spent?" I will never forget the look at this guy's face as he realized he had the completely wrong mindset about ads. And he said, "We've spent over $250,000 without any return on ads at all." My stomach fell out of my body. Look, this is direct response marketing, meaning we measure the direct response of our marketing. That's why ads are the holy grail of marketing. They're not an investment that pays off someday, sorry colleges, because every dollar spent on ads should return with another dollar very soon. That's what my good friend John Parks and I are doing, the Chief Ads Officer Workshop on May 15th through the 17th. John has spent over $150 million in Facebook ads profitably and manages the ads accounts for some of the biggest names out there. John is going to take 50 business owners through his unique Facebook ads process while you follow along. At the end, you're going to have your own account running. I simply asked John to show us what's working best today in the ads world right now. John told me that one of the hardest parts of running ads today is finding the right person to do it. Traditional org charts don't really have a spot for the ad buyer, so this workshop will help you install a new role, whether in-house or if you go higher, the new role of Chief Ads Officer inside your business. This workshop is both for those who want to learn ads themselves or for those who want to learn to communicate with their media buyer better. The workshop is only happening one time in person in my event studio in Boise, Idaho, May 15th through the 17th, and all the details are at chiefadsofficer.com. Go to chiefadsofficer.com right now to save your seat and get more details. We can't wait to see you there. Let's get back to the episode.
We've done a relaunch, which has been massive to improve the value of the business. I think typically what I see in these type of businesses in kind of internet marketing world is usually it's an artist that has a unique way of getting a result for somebody, and they enjoy doing that art so much that they don't actively looking for ways to replace themselves in the business, particularly in the promotion of the business or in the fulfillment of the result. And those are the two big pieces that have to get solved, is like, once people can consistently get the result without you as the artiste being there to take them every step of the way, that's a massive increase in the value of the business. And then once the business can figure out how to drive eyeballs and traffic without having the artiste be the one that is doing it, then that's another massive jump, because it shows that the business as an entity, it shows that the business can exist without the entrepreneur anymore, which means that a buyer can come in and there's no risk that the business doesn't exist anymore. And a lot of times I find that entrepreneurs derive a lot of their own self-worth from where they are positioned within the business. And so they actively find ways to keep themselves within the business. And a lot of times they'll do offers and launches that require them to be in the business, so that way they still have something to do.
That's very true. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think that's, you know, that's been what we found. And so I think, I think that's been kind of the thing that we've needed to solve in the business that we own together of how can this thing exist as a brand, as an entity that can, you know, self-perpetuate without any one person being involved. And it's called key man risk, like, or key woman risk. How can you eliminate the entrepreneur as the touch point that makes it so the business can't exist without them? And once you can replace the entrepreneur, then you have an asset that actually is like that the entrepreneur enjoys owning so much more, because before that, it feels like the business kind of owns them, right? And they go through periods of creative genius and they really love it. And then but then, you know, they go through periods where they would give it away for a cheese sandwich, and it helps make the business much more stable, much more predictable that way too.
The famous cheese sandwich offer. You got to beware. Oh man. Yeah. You know, I think that's fascinating. So you bring that up because there's like this, this badge of honor that this, you know, how intense the entrepreneur is still involved in the day-to-day of the business. And I think, you know, the funnel world is very young still. And yeah. I mean, what is it statistically take 10 years to like really create a solid market or something? And really ClickFunnels creating the market has only been around for 9 years. So like, it's not even at maturation really. Like, and I feel like something that collectively there's been a waking up to is the very stark difference between an entrepreneur and a business owner, and
sure,
being glued to that entrepreneurial seat. It's almost like we use the identity as a visionary as a reason to stay in the entrepreneur seat, when in reality you could be a visionary as a marketer, you could be a visionary as a business owner, you can still have that same kind of like theme throughout. But yeah, we kind of get in the way a little after a certain point. Where do you think that people from like funnel and the internet marketing world have an advantage compared to the stereotypical M&A deal you look at?
I think starting off the journey with the expectation to make money quickly is a massive advantage, because it doesn't allow you to twiddle your thumbs and think that you're making progress before revenue is made. And so like, I think the emphasis that is typically placed on revenue is it's very, very beneficial at the beginning of the journey, because so many companies go out and raise venture money or self-fund something, and they never make a dollar of, you know, they never sell anything to anybody. So the emphasis on revenue is, I think, very important to help someone. And kind of this, I think there's a certain scrappiness that exists within kind of the internet marketer, the digital marketer. I think that scrappiness is amazing, and it gives you an amazing toolkit to do so much more with so much less. And then at some point that scrappiness has to seed to strategy at some point, and be, you know, the hustle mentality can give way to like haste makes waste, and you don't have to go as fast to go a lot further. And that transition point is different in everyone's journey. But the thing that I've enjoyed so much about learning kind of the internet marketing way and the funnel land way, whatever you want to call it, is it's so different from, you know, private equity, VC, where like if things are measured in the millions, if it's made $1 million of revenue, you know, on the P&L, it says a one, you know, like, and so like things feel so big that most people end up never making a move towards anything at all, because it just feels so unattainable. And I think funnel land has brought that down to like make it achievable to the masses.
That's really fascinating. You know, even in going to business school myself, everything you would go create was a, you know, a loan or VC loan application, yeah, business plan, 20, 30 pages, you know, and you're hoping to go get revenue, sorry, a loan for the sake of building a business system, and the business system hopefully makes a dollar. But I think it's neat that the funnel space does the exact opposite and says, let's not worry about business systems. Does this make a dollar? And then from that, yeah, money, build the business systems from no borrowed cash. But that transition, unless it's consciously done, I feel like it's pretty easy to kind of get stuck in something that will cause inevitable burnout. I mean, just
even in my own entrepreneurial journey, I just did a post about this today. I quit practicing law to start an escape room business, it cost us $200,000 to get started. And within 6 months of doing the escape room business, we were making revenue, but the business required all that revenue in order to continue to build out more rooms. And so 6 months in, 6 months into the journey, I had made $0 to myself, net profit, like distributed to me. And in order to bridge that gap, my wife and I started a, really my wife built like a little meal plan that she started selling to people for 10 bucks a pop in Microsoft Word. And like that thing that we started, based on her social media audience, like that ultimately over the next 3 years, that generated $1 million of free cash flow to us at the time where like the business that I was trying to build continued to require cash. And so we actually, even as I went down a more conventional business path, I needed to supplement it with more direct marketing, digital marketing, you know, selling a digital product business because it's so cash generative. And that's exactly what my wife and I mean, we pursued both at the, in tandem in order to make this more conventional business path work. We needed to do both in order to put food on the table.
That's fascinating. At what point did the $200,000 investment start feeding you and, you know, kind of tilt the other way?
It took 8 months for it to distribute anything. And it started distributing like, I mean, I wasn't making more, like there were a lot of months when we were running that business where my wife would just make more money than me off of her Instagram to a digital product. You know what I mean? I didn't consistently out earn her for like 3 or 4 years after that. Cause you know, there are months where she would make $90,000 and it's all free cash flow. It's all just like, you know, it was more social media, but you know, it required a scrappiness that kind of opened up. Like I got into the internet marketing world to figure out the best way to scale her business from Instagram. You know, that's kind of how we met, was talking about how to improve her business in the digital marketing realm.
That's right. Is it the same one? That's Fierce then.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I didn't realize that. That's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that like, I'm hoping that you coming and speaking at Offer Launch is going to be, if anything, something that opens the eyes of, because there's a lot of advantages that I feel like those from kind of like the internet marketing world have because of what we're talking about, but it's also not naturally or any form of organically taught from this space. And so I'm hoping that it's just like a peel back the curtain, you know, like, whoa, you know, to help people kind of get it a little bit more. And without saying what it is, what are you hoping to kind of get across? What's kind of the point of what you want to get across at the speech?
Yeah, I hope to kind of maybe help people shift the idea a little bit to just the idea of how to turn what you're working on into an asset and and have it be worth something to another buyer, not because you need to sell it anytime soon, but turning it into an asset is, I think, easier than you think. And it frees up so much more of your time to work on other things that I think a lot of times entrepreneurs are almost like, I know for a long time, like I was terrified at the prospect of free time. And so like anything that gave me free time was like under no circumstance. You know? And I think showing some ways to generate more free time and turn the thing you're working on into an asset will make your life better, markedly better.
It's interesting how much I resist, you know, in the past, been able to, you know, resisting things like free time. We'll go do the speech, you know, go do the speech on opening the, you know, peeling back the curtain, and then we'll go sell a therapy thing, being able to be with your own thoughts in the private, in the quiet, like how to handle yourself when you're by yourself. Oh my gosh. That's so real, man. Oh, geez. Well, dude, I'm super excited to have you at the event. It's going to be awesome. I appreciate it. And I know you're a total genius and expert at what you do. So we are blessed to have you. It's going to be great. Any final words, final thoughts before we leave?
Get your tickets now before they sell out. It'll be dope. I'm stoked to be there.
Yeah, it'll be cool, man. Very cool. Well, again, thanks so much, everybody. Thanks for listening. And again, go get your ticket at offerlaunch.com and we'll see you guys there.